The following is a special presentation of Snake Tree Media. Watch the podcast before Christmas. It's finally here. And this time, we look back on another amazing year. The PSN outage and Ufreak TV. In Country, Mortal Kombat, the Sea Snipers and E3. The Off-Duty Gamers, Inadub, and more. PAX East 2011, and of course, SOCOM 4. Some stories were bigger than any game could be. One meant a lot to you, and it meant a lot to me. So gather around the fire with a drink or two in hand, and be advised that an even bigger year is already being planned. I'm Commander Fury, sending holiday greetings to ya. Keep your feet wet and your powder dry. Merry Christmas, hoo-yah!
Hey, what's up? This is Malik Foreplay representing Iron Star, and I'm here to say what's up to everybody out there in the Urgent Fury community, and happy holidays to everybody out there. Peace out.
I am Commander Claymore Fury for UrgentFury.com. The brave men and women in our nation's armed forces made a commitment to protect us and our freedoms. Many will come home with missing limbs, severe burns, or traumatic brain injuries. The Wounded Warrior Project was created to help and support these injured heroes through programs and services that help make their recoveries that much easier. Regardless of your position on the war, our wounded veterans deserve our support. To learn more, call 1-877-TEAM-WWP. That's 1-877-832-6997. Or visit WoundedWarriorProject.org. Hoo-yah! Next time on Urgent Frequency Television. As Urgent Fury gets ready for the new year, so too does the gaming industry. We'll talk about a few of the titles that loom large as potential fan favorites in 2012. Plus, the Nuketown Hooligans return with another installment of Noobtube, and Lieutenant Leadhead starts the year off with an all-new Bullet Points. It's all next time on Urgent Frequency Television, exclusively on PlayStation Home. Be sure to visit www.urgentfury.com for more information about Urgent Fury or Urgent Frequency Television. Urgent Fury. Win with honor. Lose with dignity. Urgent Frequency.
Everybody look at the snow in the yard.
Hoo-yah, Frequency Freaks! I'm Commander Claymore Fury, and welcome to this, our fourth podcast before Christmas, which, oddly enough, is actually the podcast a few days after Christmas and the day before New Year's Eve, but I digress. The family's all but gone, and the holiday leftovers are definitely calling my name, but before I dig in to some of Grandma Fury's baked ham and what I'm assuming is some sort of pasta salad, I thought it would be fun to look back on the year that was 2011 here in Urgent Fury. And what a year it was. We began with episode 79, the second episode of the year where I landed an exclusive interview with one of the founding fathers of Team Tactical Clan-based gaming, none other than Admiral Raider, co-founder and leader of the Sea Snipers. In this clip, we begin by talking about how games just don't seem as clan-friendly as they used to be. Then he goes on to explain the creation of the original SOCOM U.S. Navy SEAL strategy maps and explains exactly what it takes to create a strategy guide.
Why do you suppose clan-based gaming has changed
so much recently. It seems as though developers... It just seems like that the games aren't as clan-friendly anymore. For example, SOCOM, in my opinion, set the standard for clan support. And there's even rumors that they're going to forego the ability to create private rooms and stuff like that, opting for like a matchmaking format. Do you think players just want to get into the game now and start playing? I always felt like the whole clan thing was more or as much about socializing with your clan mates as it was gaming. Do you think it just...
I agree. And a lot of the reason for that is because of the actual infrastructure. I think the way especially Xbox has it set up, where I don't think you can make individual rooms like that anymore on the 360. You may be able to do it on the PS3, and I know you can do it on the PC, buy your own servers. We ran one through First Digital as well, but being able to have your own server or your own room or whatever is fantastic, because you get regulars, you know, and people can actually come and form a bond. They know where to find you. And even, you know, a lot of what we do is trying to help people, you know, be better gamers. So, you know, they come, say, hey, we want to, you know, try and learn a little bit. Let's jump into the Sea Sniper's room and whatever. They know where to find us. It's not like, oh, we got to find a guy on somebody's friends list and then put it in and see if he's open and, you know, set something up. So it's kind of a pain to do it now. And while you get to be more of a social butterfly jumping into a room and playing with random people, half the people you jump in with anymore are just raving lunatics.
They really, I see, that's what I started to say. I think that was the other advantage, that creating your own room, I think you know what to expect. If you're going to the Sea Sniper's room, you know what you're going to get when you get there. You know how you're going to be treated.
Right.
You know how people are going to act. And to me, that is something that is, in my opinion, it's paramount for me to have a really good experience.
Well, plus you also have the ability to kick people and and maintain the integrity of the room that you set for the room.
Right.
You know,
right.
If you don't mind having drunk people in there screaming and hollering or whatever, that's fine. Leave them in there. But if you get some racist people or whatever, kids screaming and singing into the mic, you just kick them. Pow. You know, can't really do that stuff nowadays. And I don't know if it's just features they neglect to include anymore, or that it's just not. I don't know who does or doesn't approve that stuff, or if it's possible to do anymore, but we need some more of that stuff.
Let's get back to the game that started it all then, SOCOM. Let's talk about the game that Urgent Fury was founded on, and certainly the game that changed your life, man. When this all started, and you and I talked about this the other day, but when this all started, you must have had no idea what it eventually was going to turn into.
No idea. Absolutely no idea. In fact, I started the clan just because I wanted to do it. I wanted to try it. I wanted to compete. I have a terrible urge to compete. But, you know, and after a month or two in, I think it was, I started, you know, drawing the maps up just for my guys to say, hey, when we jump into these matches, here's where I want you to go. You know, you go over here, you go do this, you shoot from here to here, here's a good sight line, you know, whatever. And then after, you know, two or three maps or so, I think it was, we decided to, as a clan, to just release them to the public. And so, you know, we figured everybody could use them. Why not put them out there? And, man, it took off from there. Everybody was like, I want to name something on a map, or I want to put my logo on a map, and things like that. And then we made a tactical whiteboard, and everybody could draw stuff on the maps. And, wow, it plays back like a movie and everything. So, you know, and then we ended up going out to E3 one year, and we met up with Piggyback, and we actually did meet up with Brady back then, but this was before we started working with them, and the people from Piggyback called me, I guess, maybe a week or like 2 weeks after the show, and said, hey, Rich, here is the only card that I kept from the show. Do you want to do the SOCOM 3 maps for the official strategy guide? And I said, yes. And then he said, we want you to write it, too. And I said, well, I've never written anything before. And he said, well, you know the game, right? And I said, well, of course, yeah, inside and out. He's like, well, just write everything you know about the game. And he's like, we'll edit it and put it all together and everything for you. So I said, okay, good. How long do we have? Like 4 weeks. So yeah, they sent us a copy of the game and whatever resources they could muster. And off we went, man. Did the single-player and multiplayer maps, I think, for SOCOM 3. Did the whole write-up. And what, 7 strategy guides later, I mean, we've kind of got it down to a science now.
What was the first map you guys did for SOCOM? The first one you finished and said, wow, that looks pretty cool. cool.
The very first map I ever did was Frostfire for SOCOM 1.
That's the thing that gets me.
Okay, wait, let me stop you. Before you go any further, do not go to the website and click on SOCOM 1 and 2 maps and look at Frostfire, because it is hideous.
It's changed
that much. It's one of the ugliest pieces of artwork I think I've ever done. But it totally served a purpose. And there was nothing else out there. There were no overheads at all for any SOCOM maps. But you could certainly see my progression over the past 8 years, I guess it's been, and 300 maps. I'm over 300 maps now, I think.
How long typically? Well, I guess this is like a two-part question. Like, I was sitting there wondering, like, what? Hey, number one, how do you get the dimensions? Or I'm assuming maybe that's where the developers come in. They say, okay, this is 72 feet, so you must make this 72.
Okay, that was the biggest nightmare in SOCOM, in the SOCOM series, basically. Until we had, I don't know if you remember the Skywalker cheat. There was a cheat you could put into SOCOM maybe 2 that would actually let you, every time you jump, you'd go higher up in the air, which was brilliant for me because I could fly up in the air and look straight down on the map, you know, and I could take a picture of it and I could do whatever I want.
This is revelatory. Are you telling me right now that you actually used the Skywalker cheat to create?
Absolutely. I absolutely did. I have no qualms about letting you know I did that for the sake of the maps. Of course, the CSS never, ever cheat, ever. No one's ever cheated here. No one ever will cheat. But yes, totally admitting to using that cheat for mapping purposes. I could have done anything I could to get a look at that map from overhead. But so what I had to do is I'd get a piece of graph paper or whatever, and I'd start in a corner and say, this the edge of this map, I had to do the edges, the border of the map first. So I would walk up and be like, okay, look, this edge goes straight up about 10 yards and over to the left maybe 15. So I start with that. Once I get something down, I can triangulate stuff from there. So I'll stand on the edge of one of the walls and I'll look north and say, okay, this building up here 30 yards up lines up with this line. So I'd make a line. You know what I mean? And then I'd go to the other wall and look east and line another building up with that and keep doing buildings and keep doing lines until I matched everything up. It was a nightmare, absolute nightmare.
But later on in the game, I'm assuming that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming the developers came in and kind of said, hey, dude, here's this building is actually 37 yards from the east wall. I mean,
right. Well, we don't get any developer support until we actually work on a guide. So, you know, SOCOM 3, we were able to get overheads and things like that. So that was great. But for SOCOM 1 and 2, man, it was walking every map, and I still walk every map. You know, nowadays we get, let's say, Call of Duty, we'll get that, you know, the little mini map outline, and I can take that, and what I do when I go out and work on a guide at a developer is I get printouts of all the overheads, and then I walk every map. Because every map's got underground overheads, doors, windows, ladders, all kinds of different places you can and can't go. And all that stuff needs to be marked out, especially interiors of buildings, which don't show up. They just show up as outlines, you know. So entrances and all that stuff have to be marked out. So I have to, you know, mark out all that stuff and then do all the second and third levels of everything and underground levels. Then I take all those maps. They take about 4 hours. Just to walk, you know, being able to be a part of the mapping and the writing for the strategy guides is more of a benefit, I feel like, to the community. You know, for a few bucks, you go buy the guide and you get all the maps and all the text. And, you know, while some of the text might not help some of the veteran players, it certainly helps the medium to lower end players to get into stuff or figure out how stuff works. But you'd be surprised. I mean, when we go into work on a guide, we have to write for noobs and vets.
Ah, yes. SOCOM, one of the crown jewels in the world of tactical shooters. In fact, it's the very franchise on which this great community was founded. And if you'll recall, during our first visit to E3 way back in June of 2010, Urgent Fury had the great pleasure of actually hanging out with the gang from Zipper Interactive, who gave us a sneak peek of the forthcoming SOCOM 4. And while the guys at Zipper were very generous, when we left the Golden Coast, we thought we'd have to wait like everybody else before we'd have the chance to see SOCOM 4 again. But much to our surprise and delight, we were invited to Redmond, Washington, to Zipper Interactive HQ no less, to get another look at the game. And our very own Brian Inadub Carey was there. He joined us on episode 80 with a full report.
I'm standing here with Travis Steiner, lead game designer at Zipper Interactive, talking today about SOCOM 4, the upcoming title that's expected to launch April 19th. And basically today we're getting a hands-on opportunity and get to talk to Travis himself and ask him questions about all sorts of stuff. Cool. Thanks for having us today, Travis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically, got some questions. We hear there's maybe going to be some cooperative game modes. Is that something that you can...
I can talk generally to it. We have announced that we will have 5-player co-op.
Okay.
And I can't go into specifics about what that means or the modes involved with that, but I can only say that the team here at Zipper has had a blast playing co-op. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
So we can't wait to share more on that.
Absolutely. The community, I'm sure, looks forward to that as well.
And I think... if I could, I think that a lot of the effort we put into single player, particularly with AI and the squad tactics of AI, really comes across great in co-op because you know have these great instances where the enemy's flanking you, maybe forcing you to fall back. It's very intense, and I think players are going
to
love it.
Excellent, excellent. I extremely look forward to that. Yeah, multiplayer. What can you tell us about multiplayer?
Well, man, SOCOM 4 is really an evolution in the franchise, and we have nearly all new game modes. So we still have suppression. But we also have 3 completely new team-focused game modes. And you had a chance to play one of them today, Last Defense, which is a lot of fun. It's basically each team is fighting to take control of these control points in the center of the map that are marked as A, B, and C. And each one is represented by some sort of a small satellite dish. If a team can capture all of those, it then triangulates the location of the enemy base, and it goes into what we call the Last Defense phase, where you as the attackers have 2 minutes to get in there and plant an airstrike beacon on the enemy base and destroy it. If you do that, you win. It's a defending team. Everyone's yelling over the headset, you know, retreat, fall back, and it's this desperate last-minute stand against the odds, trying to hold that position until time expires. And if you do that, the round will then reset the control points back to the middle, and each team is fighting over those again. So we love that for the team-based play that we get out of that. In addition to Last Defense, we also have Uplink, kind of a SOCOM take on Capture the Flag. You have one team defending these key data stations, and the other team is trying to get in there, obtain the data, download it, and then get back to their base to upload it. So again, big emphasis on teamwork. We have another mode, which we can't talk about today. It's still classified, but you'll be hearing more on that later. And again, more along the same lines of just really emphasizing the concept of teamwork.
Well, there's also rumors floating around that there's going to be a beta popping up soon, too. Can you tell us anything about that?
Well, yeah. If you pre-order Killzone 3, you will have a chance to play in the SOCOM 4 beta. And we haven't released any official date on when that takes place, but we're definitely looking forward to getting the game in players' hands and getting
Absolutely.
Feedback.
Now, as far as the availability, will that be limited on the beta to only people who purchase Killzone 3, or will there be other ways of obtaining that as
there
well?
There will be other ways to get into the beta. The specifics of that haven't been released yet, but yes, that's not the only way to Perfect. Get in the SOCOM 4 beta.
If you want to see the complete interview between Brian Carey and Travis Steiner, you can see it on PlayStation Home shortly. And that's all I can really say about that. You know, it's amazing thinking back how much Urgent Fury has grown just in the last 2 years. And even with a somewhat slow tournament season and even a touch of controversy this past year, without question, 2011 was easily Urgent Fury's biggest year ever. As Sony Computer Entertainment America and Urgent Fury Holdings LLC announced on February 17, 2011, the launch of Urgent Frequency Television exclusively on PlayStation Home. In this clip from episode 81, Ufreak TV's host, Jack UK Delhouse, explains what the whole experience meant to him.
I think we're all very privileged, and I'm quite excited to be a part of this, and I hope the community really receives it well, because at the end of the day, our goal is to give the community of Urgent Fury something to be proud of, to carefully grow the community with like-minded individuals that are really going to enjoy themselves and have a great time. Let's face it, it wouldn't happen if it wasn't for Cade. I mean, he's been brilliant from day one. He's been very accommodating. If anything, he's bent over backwards to help us through every step of the way to getting this thing done. So we're just very happy to have him in our corner. There was a lot of interest. We walked around the theater a bit. Seemed to be received quite well, especially for a first product. You know, and we'd like to take into consideration you know, the community more and what they want to do in future episodes. SOCOM really is the title that sort of drew me in to be more of an avid gamer, that I would instead of spending half an hour here or there, it would just be hours and hours on end. We've joked quite a bit about the sun coming up, and we're still playing SOCOM, and it took on a whole new level getting involved in clans. And for those that are listening, that are not involved in clans. It really is a different gaming experience being in a clan, making friends that people that you may never even meet in person. I mean, by chance, we had the opportunity to meet in person, which was fantastic out in LA for E3. But there's a lot of guys in clans that we never actually met in person that are just fantastic guys that we grew to know. We grew to know their families, which sounds a bit odd. And quite personal, but it's what the clan experience brings to those that are truly vested into their teammates.
In most tactical shooters, it seems like there's always some psychopathic antagonist who wants to take over the world. And the only thing standing in the way are the heroes. But for episode 83, I had the honor of interviewing a group of real-life heroes. A handful of men and women from around the world who have served or are serving in the military. And also happen to be hardcore gamers as well. They call themselves the Off-Duty Gamers, or ODG. And in this clip, they explain how when it comes to authenticity, some games get it right, and some games get it all wrong.
Getting involved with Medal of Honor, probably one of the best things I could do in preparation for getting this Off-Duty Gamers out is get involved with that group. They have a reverence for the military, the history, and the military as a whole, that it's not just about getting it right, it's about respecting the military. And it was that attitude that really drew me to work very closely with them. And when it came time to come back around, and Off-Duty Gamers had just launched, and I got an opportunity to work with Medal of Honor on this latest title, it was a no-brainer. Got involved with them, and I could see they had, they consulted real technical operators. They had more details than you could actually believe. It hooks into the live military. So they had it down. And no one should doubt for a second the commitment those guys have to the military community and the respect that they do. And I think that really shows up on the games. I'm not saying that the other ones aren't. I'm just saying that there's a certain level of concentration to it that draws me. And I think we're starting and we're seeing that it's a bleed over into DICE and now the Battlefield 3 material.
Well, and I think I really do. I think that the immersive nature of gaming, I think it's important for the authenticity to be there. Since we're talking about Medal of Honor, I know, and you guys don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but I know that Medal of Honor, they actually received some criticism because they did include, and I should say they included the word Taliban when they were talking about their enemy. And in talking with some of the people at EA, their take on it was basically, and I, of course, I'm not going to quote anybody, but their take on it was, we're telling a story. We're telling the soldier's story. And again, like I said, that's something that Medal of Honor's always done. Is that something that you guys think about, or is that something that you feel like that maybe that's somebody else making a stink about it?
Well, I think we'll go around the room with that one. I think it's a good one to hit. But let me just say that a lot was made of that. And the irony was that it didn't come from inside the military. It came from a KAA's mom, and she got on network news, and they just played it to death. Personally, I think it's ridiculous. Them changing the name of the game is like, if the text on the page said you're fighting against Cookie Monster, they didn't change anything else. You're still seeing, the Taliban fighters, Chechnyan. It doesn't change anything, and it also doesn't mean that the people on the other side are have that ideology. It's no different than we're out in the field with the laser tag gear, and you guys are the bad guys, we're the good guys. It's all about training, and it's all about doing the job. So to me, it's just a lot of work up about nothing.
I agree with you. Let's go around the panel here. Does anybody else have any opinions on that? And if not, we can move on. But I am curious to know what the actual military community thinks about that.
I definitely agree with Rigger. There was so much controversy about it, but it was mostly from civilians. People in the military, I can say that the majority of them, it didn't bother them that it had the word Taliban in it. It could have went either way for me. I really could care less if it had the word Taliban or if it didn't. But I think all the stink that was made out of it was just, like Rigger said, ridiculous. I really thought it was pretty pointless.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I agree with them. I think the news agencies, they thrive on controversy, and that's what they put out there the most. And like they said, it came outside the military. It wasn't the military itself complaining about the word Taliban being in there.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's the media jump on the bandwagon, and sometimes politicians do it as well. They jump on the bandwagon, they try and... I mean, end of the day, it's a game.
That's exactly right. It's a game that people need to understand that when they're playing it. And a lot of the people that were throwing the biggest fit have probably never played a video game in their life.
One of the things that you saw and everybody focused on was, okay, AFES, the Army and Air Force Exchange Service, they run the stores on posts. And, you know, so that was the big thing. Oh, they're pulling it off the shelves. The military doesn't sit around and go, geez, what games should be on the shelves or not. They sell things just like any other retailer to the consumers, but they just happen to be military. What you saw there was a political move when they saw the sensitivity issues going across network news. It makes people panic. And the higher echelons of the military are very political. It's very much like the... elected officials. So nobody wants to get in trouble and be that one guy that didn't say anything. So everybody, they tend to sometimes overreact when in retrospect, I think they should have probably just stayed away from it.
How do you guys feel about what you've seen so far of Battlefield 3?
So far, it's amazing what they're doing with it. And I think I speak for us all. We're really excited to see where this goes. I mean, we're pushing at DICE privately to try to bring us in earlier to help them out, but also so we can get a good look at this thing. So destruction and stuff is really exciting. I think DICE is on track to really put something amazing together this fall, and I'm just hoping that it's not going to succumb to any of the hype. Sometimes they get the hype turns into something a little bigger than the game, but so far what we've seen, very impressed. We have been happy to break these things down. And as I say on the site, we don't do these breakdowns to nitpick or anything like that. And it should actually be a compliment to DICE on the work that they're doing, that we can narrow it down to certain particular details that are just a little off.
What are some games out there that you feel like get it right? And what are some games that you feel like they need some work in terms of their military authenticity?
Well, Angie, I think as the person who has served most recently, especially over in Iraq, I think you should maybe take point on some of the visuals and some of the things you've seen.
After watching the Battlefield 3 Faultline episodes, I was really impressed. Just the intricate details that are put into it, it's amazing. Like, I would notice the stuff like the twist of his leg while he's throwing a grenade, or, you know, pulling the charging handle, the way you reload, all that kind of stuff was incorporated into the Faultline episode, and there's really no words to describe it. It looks amazing, and I have really high hopes for it. Looking at some other military FPSs, I would have to say that some franchises like Call of Duty are a little bit extreme, like problems with the weapons being underpowered or overpowered, you know, things like that, where it's not really true to form when you're basing it on real life experiences. But in the end, like everyone said, it's still a video game.
If they was to make a game that was actually true to life, military type, nobody would ever play it, because most of the time you'd be sitting around smoking a cigarette, waiting for something to happen, waiting for your ride to show up, sitting in the motor pool because they haven't changed the oil yet in your Humvee. The realism is nice when it comes to the graphics, you know, the weapons and how they perform and what things look like. But for gameplay itself, you've got to keep it as a game.
Now, while the big story of Episode 86 was supposed to be the massive security breach and subsequent outage of the PlayStation Network, we began the episode with what I believed was actually the bigger story at the time, which is, I guess, why I even included it in the podcast. On the evening of May 1st, 2011, with the nation watching and waiting in anticipation, all the cable news channels were chirping about a special address to the nation by President Barack Obama. As we would all eventually learn, just a few days earlier, while the entire world was focused on the royal wedding of Prince William and Lady Catherine, the president had set into motion one of the most important military operations in our nation's history, Operation Neptune Spear.
The following is a production of Snake Train Media.
Good evening. Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda, and a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands of innocent men, women, and children. It was nearly 10 years ago that a bright September day was darkened by the worst attack on the American people in our history. The images of 9/11 are seared into our national memory. And yet we know that the worst images are those that were unseen to the world. The empty seat at the dinner table, children who were forced to grow up without their mother or their father, parents who would never know the feeling of their child's embrace, nearly 3,000 citizens taken from us, leaving a gaping hole in our hearts. On September 11th, 2001, in our time of grief, the American people came together. On that day, no matter where we came from, what God we prayed to, or what race or ethnicity we were united as one American family. We were also united in our resolve to protect our nation and to bring those who committed this vicious attack to justice. We give thanks for the men who carried out this operation, for they exemplify the professionalism, patriotism, and unparalleled courage of those who serve our country. And they are part of a generation that has borne the heaviest share of the burden since that September day. Finally, let me say to the families who lost loved ones on 9/11 that we have never forgotten your loss, nor wavered in our commitment to see that we do whatever it takes to prevent another attack on our shores. And tonight, let us think back to the sense of unity that prevailed on 9/11. I know that it has at times frayed. The cause of securing our country is not complete, but tonight we are once again reminded that America can do whatever we set our mind to. That is the story of our history. Let us remember that we can do these things not just because of wealth or power, but because of who we are. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
March 2010. Sony removes the ability to install third-party operating systems such as Linux on the PlayStation 3. While most players don't care or even notice, another segment becomes extremely frustrated.
January 2nd, 2011.
Hacker George Hotz, a.k.a. GeoHotz, successfully jailbreaks the PlayStation 3 so that it could do a number of things it shouldn't be able to do. Hotz then published the process on his website and his YouTube channel.
January 11th, 2011.
Sony sues Hotz for distributing jailbreak software to the public, claiming that Hotz is helping promote piracy by allowing illegal copies of PlayStation 3 games to be played on jailbroken systems.
April 2nd, 2011.
A group of hackers known as Anonymous begins Operation Sony, an attempt to disrupt Sony websites. The demand is simple: leave Hotz alone.
April 11th, 2011.
Sony settles with Hotz. Details are scarce, but Hotz agrees to take down his website and info on how to jailbreak the PlayStation 3.
April 13th, 2011.
In a creepy video message, Anonymous calls for a day of Sony protest and warns of an incoming attack.
April 16th and 17th, 2011.
Hackers digitally break into the PlayStation Network and Sony Online Entertainment. They steal personal PSN and SOE user information, including European SOE credit and debit card numbers.
April 19th, 2011.
Sony detects a PlayStation Network breach. An investigation starts, but the public isn't told.
April 20th, 2011.
Sony shuts down the PlayStation Network, citing technical issues.
April 22nd, 2011.
As public unrest begins to mount about the PlayStation Network being down, denying any responsibility for the PlayStation Network outage.
April 26th, 2011.
Sony admits that the PlayStation Network has been hacked and calls for FBI assistance.
May 1st, 2011.
Sony executives apologize for the PlayStation Network data breach and outage. In the meantime, Sony and investigators discover the data breach on Sony Online Entertainment and shut down the SOE servers as well.
May 2nd, 2011.
Sony reveals details about the SOE data breach to the public.
May 4th, 2011.
Sony Chairman Kaz Hirai tells Congress investigators found a file within the PlayStation Network that was named Anonymous, which had the group's motto, "We Are Legion," attached. Although Sony does not specifically accuse Anonymous of the intrusion, the company claims the PlayStation Network was made more vulnerable by the group's earlier attack, possibly keeping Sony's IT security busy while other hackers snuck in and stole data.
May 5th, 2011.
Anonymous denies that it had any part in the credit card theft. The group says that it only goes after large and corrupt corporations and governments.
On the same day,
Sony releases a statement saying it is in the final stages of testing its new network and that the PlayStation Network will be returning in the coming days.
May 10th, 2011.
Patrick Siebold, Senior Director, Corporate Communications and Social Media for Sony, released this statement. Quote, I know you all want to know exactly when the services will be restored. At this time, I can't give you an exact date, as it will likely be at least a few more days. We're terribly sorry for the inconvenience and appreciate your patience as we work through this process. End of quote. And that brings us to the present, May 11th, 2011, and the PlayStation Network and Sony Online Entertainment are still down as of 2:55 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Boy, we're up late, or are we up early? But that means that we are now entering what will be day 21 of what some are calling the largest personal data heist in history.
As far as a PR standpoint, Sony has really not done a good job of informing on a news-related basis what exactly is going on. I mean, one or two blogs every other day or every third day is just not good enough. And I think that a lot of people out there are demanding answers. And that's where someone like Congress or some certain senators feel the need to get involved, because the people want answers. And I just don't think Sony, from a PR perspective, has done a good job on getting enough answers and to the public. I mean, you know, even lately it's been a bit of news here or a bit of news there. It just hasn't been enough. So I think that's one of the main reasons that the government has felt pressured from people to try and get some answers.
I do want to comment real quick on some of the stuff that Jack's talking about with the senators. I'm sure there's a lot more information Sony would like to release that the FBI said, no, you can't. That's part of the investigation. So until the investigation, everything is all done, there's not going to be any transparency. We're just going to have to accept that. But I do agree that the PR has not been done well, and that's...
I think even the way you presented that, though, Shane, would have helped. For instance, if somebody from Sony had come out and said, look, there's an FBI investigation going on. There's a lot that we'd really like to share. We know you're demanding answers. The reality is, because of the sensitivity of what's happening, we cannot release information in regards to the security breach. Again, it just goes back to the PR and letting us feel comfortable that we are connected to some sort of answers that are going on. There's no way of getting around it. Yeah, a company like Sony, they will be able to fend through all of this, but there are certain developers out there that won't be able to react so easily when it comes to the financial losses. I mean, these are tough times. That's no secret. And some of the big houses out there, you know, EA Sports, and a lot of those are going to be okay, but there are going to be some smaller developers that absolutely take a hit on something like this. And I don't think you're going to see the end of litigation anytime soon from some of these developers also.
The developers that are really going to be hurt right now are the ones that design games specifically the PSN store. Those guys are sitting idle.
You know, unlike Shane, who's in the IT field, from a user perspective, it's just hard to take in, to be honest with you. I mean, we've got an expectation here that you know, we're putting our personal details, we're trusting these companies, big companies, Microsoft, Sony, just to name a few, Apple, Google. We're trusting these companies to be very, very careful and studious with our information. And for a company like Sony to be breached at that level, you know, and from a user perspective, there's an expectation with all the details that we have out there that we expect our private information, credit card information, to be stored, secured. And there's almost really no excuse for it for a company of this size to be hacked like that. And again, that's just from a user perspective. We're very guarded about our information. We're talking about personal identity theft here on such a grandioso scale.
Now, of course, the whole Sony security breach thing has played itself out, and it appears that everybody is going to live happily ever after. But for almost a month in 2011, we weren't sure what was going to happen. Now, I could go on all night, but since that pasta stuff really is pretty tasty, and I don't want to insult Grandma Fury or her ham, we'll wrap things up around here shortly. But I can't leave without sharing Urgent Frequency's one and only spoof ad from 2011. You know, when the whole spoof ad thing began way back when, we had no idea that they would be so popular with the community. And I wish I had a penny for every email I've gotten asking when we planned on doing another spoof ad. But you have to understand that the spoof ads are usually born out of one of two things. Either a clan or community member does something stupid that makes everybody mad, or something that just makes everybody laugh. And after asking a simple and very innocent question on the Urgent Fury forums, our good friend Hippie Chick found out the hard way that nobody is safe from the Urgent Frequency spoof ad. And based on what became a somewhat racy but outright hilarious thread, we created Urgent Frequency's very first, almost, not safe for work spoof ad. If you've got kids in the room, you might want to cover their ears.
Urgent Frequency spoof ad. We are not laughing with you. We are laughing at you.
Whether it's a birthday, a special holiday gift, or just a little something to let her know how much she means to you, nothing says I love you like a nice, warm facial. Presenting Money Shot by Hippie Chic.
Money Shot.
Money Shot blends the healing power of aloe and the warming touch of exotic nut butter to create a sensuous, soothing mask that melts away the day. And with its special applicator, you're in complete control of the money shot. No more cold creams and sticky mess. Just a warm caress that says I love you. Money Shot by Hippie Chic. Available where fine facials are sold.
Money Shot.
Avoid contact with eyes.
What's going on, Urgent Fury? This is Jess from Raven Fall. Just want to wish everybody at Raven Fall and also everybody in the Urgent Fury community a happy holiday.
Hey, it's your buddy Doc from Replay with Doc inside PlayStation Home, and all our boys that are coming back from overseas. I wish them all a happy holiday. All my friends at Urgent Fury, except Shane Bell, and all my friends inside PlayStation Home. I wish you all the best, and may Santa forgive whatever you did this year.
As we celebrate Christmas and we open our gifts, we realize what priceless gifts a soldier gives to our country. The gifts of patriotism, service, and deep dedication to our nation. Hi, this is Mrs. Baby. I and everyone at Urgent Fury would like to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And Commander Fury, when you're done, I have something for you.
Urgent Frequency.
The Grinch's lair! The impudence! The audacity! The unmitigated gall! You've called down the thunder! Now get ready for the boom! Gaze into the face of fear! Booga booga!
Well, that just about does it around here for the fourth annual Podcast Before Christmas. I hope you've enjoyed looking back on 2011. And I hope with the new year literally hours away, you'll all be with us again in 2012. For everybody here at Urgent Fury, and I really mean this, we really do wish each and every one of you a very happy holiday and a new year filled with laughter and good gaming. We couldn't do it without you. Anything we do, we couldn't do without the members of this community. Thanks for hanging out with us. Now, here's Cheech and Chong's Christmas classic, Santa and His Old Lady. I'm Commander Fury. Keep your feet wet and your powder dry. Hoo-yah.
Mama, mamacita, donde está Santa Claus? The vato with a bony knees, he's coming down the street with no shoes on his feet, and he's going to... No, that ain't it. Mamacita, donde está Santa Claus? The guy with the hair on his jaws, he... Nah, hey, man, come over here, man. I need some help, man.
Yeah, man, I can dig that. Like, what are you doing, man?
I'm trying to write a song about Santa Claus, man, but it's not coming
about
out.
About who, man?
About Santa Claus, man. You know Santa Claus,
oh,
man.
Oh, yeah, man. I played with those dudes, man.
What?
Yeah, last year at the Fillmore, man. Me and the bass player sat in, man.
Oh, hey, man, you think Santa Claus is a groove, huh? No, it's not a groove, man.
Would they break up, man?
Oh, no, man, it's one guy, man. You know, he had a red suit on, man, with black patent leather shoes. You know that guy, man?
Oh, yeah. He's with Motown, ain't he?
No, man.
Yeah,
he's
played with that dude, too. Man.
No.
Yeah, he's a good singer, man.
No, no, hold on, man. He's not with Motown, man.
Well, then he's with Buddha, man.
No. Oh, man, you don't know who Santa Claus is, man.
Yeah, no, I'm not from here, man. Like, I'm from Pittsburgh, man. I don't know too many local dudes.
Oh, I see. Well, hey, man, sit back and relax, and I'll tell you the story about Santa Claus, man. Listen, once upon a time, about 5 years ago, there was this groovy dude, and his name was Santa Claus, you know? And he used to live over in the projects with his old lady. And they had a pretty good thing together because his old lady was really fine and she could cook and all that stuff like that. You know, like she made the best brownies in town, man. Oh, I could remember them now, man. I could eat one of them, man. Wow,
did you know these people, man?
Oh, yeah, man. They used to live next door to me, you know, until they got kicked out, man.
What, they got kicked out of the projects, man?
Yeah, you know what happened, man? They used to live with all these midgets, you know? And the midgets used to make a lot of noise, you know, like pounding and hammering and pounding all night, man.
Well, typical freaks.
Oh, yeah, man, they were really freaks, man. As a matter of fact, they all moved up north together, you know?
Well, they have to go get their head together, man.
Yeah, get their head together, man. And they started a commune, you know? It was called the Santa Claus and His Old Lady Commune. It was a real famous one up there, man. And they used to sit around and groove all the time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Really good time, man.
Yeah, they used
to eat the brownies, man. They drink the tea, man. And what they did most of the time, though, was make a lot of goodies, you know? And they had everything they needed. They only needed to come into town maybe once a year or something like that.
Pick up the welfare check and the food stamp.
Yeah, man. No, no, what they did, man, is once a year, when they made all the goodies, you know, they used to put them in a big shopping bag, and then they used to take the shopping bag and deliver them to all the boys and girls all the way around the world, man.
Hey, well, that's it, man. Yeah, that sounds real nice.
Oh, yeah, they were really nice people. And so much class, man, they had so much class, you know, like even take the way they used to deliver the toys, you know. It's like Santa Claus used to have this really sharp short, man, you know. It was lowered to the ground at twice pipes, candy apple red, and button top, ooh, clean.
That sounds like a hip snowmobile.
No, no, it wasn't a snowmobile, it was a sled, you know. One of those big sleds, you know. And he used to have it pulled by some reindeers, you know, like reindeers.
Some what, man?
Some reindeers, you know. He used to hook them onto the sled, and then he used to stand up inside the sled and hold onto the reins, and then call out their names, like, on Donner, on Blitzen, on Chewy, on Tavo, come on, Beto. And then the reindeers used to take off into the sky and fly across the sky, man.
Man, that's far out, man.
Yeah, and then when they fly across the sky, they used to come down to places like, oh, Chicago, L.A., Nueva York, and Pacoima, and all those places, you know, and then land on top of people's roofs, and then old Santa Claus would make himself real small, you know, like a real small guy, and he'd come down the chimney, and then he would give you all the stuff that he made, man, and dig this, man, he did it all in one night, man.
Hey, just a minute, man, how'd he do that, man?
Oh, well, man, he took the freeway. How else, man?
No, man. No, man. How did he do all that other stuff, man? Like, how'd he make himself small, man? And how'd he get the reindeer off the ground, man?
Oh, well, man, he had some magic dust, man.
Some magic dust?
Yeah, magic dust. You know, he used to give a little bit to the reindeer, a little bit to Santa Claus, a little bit more for Santa Claus, a little bit more.
And this would get the reindeer off, man?
Oh, got 'em off, man. Are you kidding, man? They flew all the way around the world, man.
Hey, that's far out, man. Hey, how come I've never met this dude, man?
Oh, man, he doesn't do that bit anymore, man. It got too dangerous, man.
Yeah, I can dig that, man, because that's a dangerous bit, man.
Yeah, let me tell you, it sure was, man. Like, just 2 years ago, man, he got stopped at the border, you know, and they took him into another room and took off his clothes, man, and searched him and searched his bag of goodies, man. And then when he was leaving, man, he was flying through the air, somebody took a shot at his reindeer, you know?
Oh, that's a drag.
Yeah, it really was, man. And then, man, he went down south, man, and they tried to cut off his hair and his beard, man. And all the time he was getting stopped and pulled over and asked for his ID, man. Just everywhere he went, he ran into too much recession, man.
No, man, you mean he ran into too much repression, man.
A repression, recession, man. It's all the same thing, man.
Yeah, man. It's a drag, man, because we could sure use a dude like that right now.
You know, oh, he still comes around, man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but he comes in disguises now.
Oh, he went underground.
Yeah, underground, man.
I can dig it.
Yeah, but you want to see his disguise, man. Nobody would ever know it was him, man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's got a job in front of the department store ringing this bell.
I seen the dude.
Yeah, man. You know who I'm talking about, yeah, man.
Yeah, I played with that guy last year, man.
What?
Yeah, we played in front of a store, man. We made a lot of
money.
Oh,
hey, wait a minute, man. Santa Claus is not a musician, man.
I'm hip, man. That cat didn't know any tunes, man.
Oh, wait a minute, man. No, he's not into that at all, man.
No, I played with this dude.
Are you sure, man?
The only thing I'm addicted to right now is winning.